Melissa Asti is a Massachusetts native with a passion for understanding human behavior and fostering growth. After graduating from the University of Richmond with a degree in psychology, she began her career as a research assistant at a nonprofit, focusing on improving educational outcomes for K through 12 students. She's transitioned to leadership development at an e-commerce company, and she's found fulfillment in empowering individuals and teams to achieve their full potential. I'm excited to have Melissa here on the show today, and you can read more in the show notes about her bio, but we're going to dive in today on the topic of burnout and the experience that Melissa had with burnout and navigating through to the other side. So stick around.
Welcome to Rat Race Reboot. I'm your host, Laura Noel. And as a certified coach and former 27-year military leader, each week I provide bite-sized mindset pivots that will help you reset your mind, reawaken your spirit, and regain your control.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Rat Race Reboot. If you've been following along, this is now episode 11 on the topic of burnout. We have been covering in short, bite-sized little pieces, different aspects of burnout. And I'm really grateful to welcome Melissa Asti to the show because she's going to share, and through our dialogue, her experience with burnout. What were some of the signs? What were some of the triggers that kind of caused it? And how did she recognize that and then make it through to the other side? And I think this will be a really inspiring conversation for those of you listening. So first and foremost, Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Laura. I'm excited to be on the show.
Oh my gosh, me too. I've been looking forward to this for quite a long time. So I'm really grateful for you having the courage to be here and to pour into our listeners and share a little bit of your story. I'm really interested in, you know, your transition to the field of organizational development and in the master's program. What inspired you to kind of go down that path?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's taken a lot of trial and error and reflection on my part to get here. And organizational psychology is not something that I knew existed when I entered college. I remember loving psychology. I took AP psychology in high school. I always was motivated by people and behavior. I was always fascinated by these things. And I remember just typing on my computer, like, what are different fields in psychology? Because I knew clinical psychology wasn't necessarily for me. It felt very heavy and something that I personally didn't want to do. So I knew there were other things out there. And organizational psychology or even IO psychology popped up. And I was like, huh, this is so fascinating. What is this? And it's just the psychology of the workplace. And once I entered the workforce, obviously in more formal education, I remember reflecting a lot on what could be better, what could make me more motivated, what could make my peers more motivated. And it's always been something that's fascinated me. And then I finally was like, you know what? Like, this is the field for me. I love helping people. That's one of my values. And we work for a third of our lives. So in order to help people find meaning and fulfillment and bring their whole selves to work is something that just felt like the right place to be in.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you're saying we work for a third of our lives. And so that's one of the things I talk about quite a bit is alignment and doing work that maybe doesn't even feel like work because you love it. I mean, of course, we're putting in the time to get the requisite skills to do the work that we're doing. And we're putting in our time to serve in the way that we want to serve. But that at least that aspect of alignment and fulfillment is there, because that's also one of the indicators of burnout, you know, that alignment. Of course, you know, I did a previous episode on passion and how our passions can also lead to burnout if we're not careful.
Yeah.
But I love this alignment piece of it is so important. Doing meaningful work, fulfilling work.
Yeah. And it's all about balance too, I think, because as you'll start to hear my story, you know, you can find meaning in your work, but if it's too far on one side of the pendulum, that can also lead to burnout. So it's how do I take care of myself, but also how do I fulfill my values and my meaning through my work?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to hear your story. I mean, it sounds like you had that meaning, but something got out of kilter and contributed to that burnout. So if you don't mind, why don't you share a little bit of your story of, you know, what you noticed when you were experiencing burnout? How did this come about?
Yeah, definitely. So I experienced burnout like many people during the COVID-19 pandemic. As you heard in my bio, I was a research assistant for a nonprofit organization that supported K-12 students and educational outcomes. So I, like many people know, experienced this huge implosion, I guess is how you could refer to it, in education and what education looked like during the COVID-19 pandemic. So not only was I stuck at home and dealing with the stress of this pandemic, fearing for my health and other people's and loved ones' health and, you know, the state of our country, but I experienced this shift in work where, you know, my nonprofit organization that I was working for at the time was like, we could step up here and do a lot of work to sort of pave the way for what education looks like, and solving a lot of the issues that students were experiencing, which was great and felt extremely meaningful, but there was so much work to be done and there was sort of no precedent to fall back on. So there was a ton of opinions from parents, teachers, students, everyone under the sun about what education should look like and what we should be doing. And I found myself working on projects until 9 p.m. at night. And there was this sense of like, I have to get this done because this is really, really important work. And for me, you know, being stuck inside during this time too is like, you know, you can't plan vacations. And like, I wasn't taking PTO because I was like, well, I'm just stuck at home anyway, so I might as well just keep grinding and do all the work. So I slowly found myself getting more and more tired. For me, it was really the physical sensations that indicated to me like, oh, like this isn't a sustainable way to work and to live. I'm very headache prone. I was getting constant stress and tension headaches. My work involves staring at a screen, especially virtually working at home. So, you know, the screen time on top of that wasn't helping. And then just the exhaustion, because I would go to bed at night and, you know, I'd think about all the things that I have to do the next day and I'd be anxious about that and getting that done. You know, there's so much to be done. So I wasn't sleeping well. And so I was waking up exhausted and then not able to do my work as effectively. And maybe that work was taking me a longer time than it would have if I had, you know, gotten a good night rest and felt, you know, energized coming and opening my laptop and delving into that work. So those are some of the signs, but I'll pause there and see what other questions that you have.
Yeah. So how long did you operate in this mode before you took, because, you know, I've been there too. Many of the folks mm-hmm. listening are entrepreneurs and leaders, and we can put our heads down and do that meaningful work and not realize how much time has passed us by and sort of ignore the signs. But then when we kind of reverse engineer, gosh, how long have I been in this state? Yeah. How long were you in that state of operating?
Yeah, I mean, the first couple of months, like many people, and especially in the education world, like work kind of halted. So I actually didn't have a lot of work to do in the beginning. But then once that ramped up, I was probably in it for around 7 or 8 months before I finally was like, you know what, something has to give here. This isn't sustainable and something has to change. So it was quite a long time. And, you know, I tried to implement some methods to take care of myself in between that time, got blue light glasses, things like that to try to help with some of the physical symptoms, going for walks, trying to find those moments of peace in between to help with the burnout. But for me, that wasn't enough. So eventually I did end up leaving that job to go somewhere else. But, you know, in burnout, that's not always the case. Sometimes you can set stronger boundaries or things like that. But for me, that was sort of the right decision at the time.
Okay. Wow. And So it sounds like, I think, very typical too, when we're in that burnout mode and we're doing something that's meaningful. Mm. And the transition of working from home too, I know I experience this. I mean, I have clients all over, but definitely being grounded.
Yeah.
traveling enough for work. We can think, well, what's wrong with me? Let me do more. Yeah. Let me do this and all the things that I'm not doing to take care of myself, like exercise or blue light glasses or going for the walk or meditating. But then it can be like we're adding more things to the schedule, which also contribute to burnout. And also the connection piece, you know, during particularly the beginning stages of the pandemic. And even now we're, the landscape of how we work has shifted and there's a lot more remote working. So we don't have that connection, that personal connection with people. And that's also an aspect of burnout.
Yeah, no, the connection piece is huge for me. And actually you're making me reflect on this a little bit more than I have, but one of the things I loved about that job prior to the pandemic, I was going to the office 5 days a week. And some of my peers, like I was very close and still am very close with some of those peers. We had friendship, we got lunch every day, and that connection really also brought meaning to work and made me excited to go to work. So to have that aspect taken away when we abruptly transitioned to virtual, and then my company not really, you know, being a virtual company and not having put the research and the work in to create those processes to create that connection virtually, that was missing in a lot of aspects.
Okay. That's so important. And a lot of organizations started hiring companies who specialize in that virtual space. And how can, so here's the thing is like, we were kind of left there floundering, not knowing what to do, but then at the same time, there are all these resources around us that we can tap into to, there are people who specialize in creating connection in Zoom meetings. And how do you do that? And how do you produce an effective meeting that fosters that connection? So there were so many resources that I think came about particularly or emerged. Maybe they were already there, but they really just kind of floated to the surface during that time. And it's a consideration if organizations are continuing that work model or that hybrid work model, that connection piece is a big part. And, you know, if we don't have it, that can lead to burnout. So what happened then when you left your role? Because it's hard if you're a type A achiever and you're doing all the things and you're working toward this meaningful work and we're not setting boundaries and we're like, I can take on the world. Mm-hmm. So once you're in that pattern, it's like these new neural pathways are carved out and this is who we are and this is how we engage day to day. So, you know, sometimes leaving the role can help, but we still bring us wherever we go. Yeah. So how did you navigate in your new role?
Yeah. So I transitioned from research and education to an e-commerce company, very much a for-profit company. So very different cultures in the leadership development space. So it, you know, from the outside kind of looks like, huh, like that's sort of a weird transition. But surprisingly, there was a lot of overlaps and it was a way for me to achieve more of that work-life balance that I desired in that position, but also to still sort of help people and fulfill some of those values and do the work that I found really valuable. So prior in my research assistant role, the work that I love doing was I coached a school team to look at their data for red flag, sort of root cause analysis for student attendance issues. So what's really going on? So I love that like root cause sort of like, let's go deeper, let's find the real issue and let's help versus punish a student for, you know, not getting to class on time or not getting to class a certain number of days out of the year. And another thing I loved was I created like these communities of practice for state education agencies to sort of connect, share best practices to sort of help navigate the new world they were in the COVID-19 pandemic in education. So I love facilitating that connection, preparing material to present to them, and then facilitating sort of the discussions and the breakout rooms and things like that. So a lot of that, I actually have a very close friend who was a recruiter at the time, went to him, said, "Hey, I'm ready for something new. This isn't working for me right now. Here are the things that I love doing." And he works for my current company. And, you know, he was recruiting, of course, but he was like, you know, a lot of the things that you really love doing align with learning and development. We have this position open. Why don't you interview for it? Just see how it goes. So I interviewed, and the people were lovely. They were so driven by learning and development. They also found a ton of value in helping people. They were driven by people in that type of data versus, you know, the numbers and the dollar signs. Like, that's not something that motivates me as much. So to sort of find that group of people that I'd be working with that have similar values, I was like, this is so important to me. And then I'd be helping people, you know, it's an e-commerce. So it's not like as traditionally as meaningful as helping students and educational outcomes, but I was still able to help those people in work achieve their full potential, and their leaders. So they're helping their team members achieve their full potential as well.
Wow. So it sounds like you took all of the things that you loved about your previous work and sort of crafted this model for how you wanted to work. And that's another thing that we talk about often, is sometimes we can do that within our current position, get clear on what are the things that you love. You know, what would you love spending your time doing? And is it possible to even redesign your role where you are? And if not, and you go somewhere else, it sounds like you sort of designed a role and it just aligned with something that they needed.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great point. And I think we have a lot more control than we think we do. And I think when we're in burnout, we're almost like, this is happening to me, which is true to a certain degree. But there's, you know, it took me, like, I was going to bed, I was feeling guilty that I wasn't achieving everything that I could have achieved, or that I was feeling so tired. Like, why can't I just find that energy to keep working and doing what I need to do? And then it was this realization of like, no, like, I actually have the agency to change my current position and, you know, to find the motivation to take steps to do that. For me, it was to go somewhere else. But like you said, you can also create boundaries in your current job, leverage your management, your manager or team leader, and try to find the work that is meaningful for you. My current company has internal mobility. That's a huge one where people are like, I don't have to go to a whole new company, but, you know, can I find a team or an open position that better aligns with what it is that I want to be doing and my values and the work that I find meaningful?
That's such a great, great way of looking at it. We don't have to go somewhere else. We don't even have to redesign what we're doing. If we have that internal mobility, we can move within. If we can notice that we're in burnout and then take kind of a wider macro view of the system, where else might I be a better fit, or where else might something be a better fit for me and my values and the things that I love doing? So you love your work. It's aligned with your values. How do you now, having been through burnout, how do you kind of put the brakes on or notice? Because I don't know about you, but I notice burnout, the feelings of it before it happens, because I've experienced burnout. And I can catch myself, and it's often counterintuitive to just cancel appointments and stop everything, but I'm more effective when I can notice it, stop it, set a boundary, and then reset. How do you manage if you notice you're kind of joyfully working in your work that you love, and then you're like, whoa, I need a sandwich.
Yeah, and it happens, right? Like, it does. But exactly what you said, like, noticing those signs of like, I'm approaching that burnout stage and like, what can I do now? Again, going back, what am I in control of? What can I do now to sort of prevent that from happening? And it happens. I'm working full time and I'm a full time student. So it has taken a lot of intentionality for me. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. A lot of intentionality to sort of take care of myself and to find those things that allow me to sort of take care of myself, make sure that my glass, I'm not pouring from an empty glass. And it's hard because for me personally, I think what caused a lot of the burnout is it's sort of ingrained in me to sort of keep going, push through the work. And once you're done with everything you have to do, then you earn your break, right? And that's such like a harmful way of thinking that's ingrained in so many of us. Yeah. So for me, it's really like, because there's always going to be work, right? There's really never an end to work. There's always new things on your plate. So how do I be okay with pausing and saying, hey, maybe I didn't do everything that I set out to do today, or maybe I didn't complete my whole to-do list, but how can I be okay pausing, going for a walk for 15 minutes? Because, you know, I feel that headache coming on. Yeah. And, you know, I don't want it to turn into a full-blown migraine and then prevent me from going to work and doing any work tomorrow. So let me go for that 15-minute walk. Let me call my mom and have a chat. Let me go out and grab a sandwich for lunch. Like, do those small things that, you know, make you happy, refill your cup, and do it consistently, not just when, you know, build it into your schedule to try to be proactive about it versus just when you start to feel the headache coming on and you start to feel tired. Or for me, one big one is I start to get irritable with people, especially people that give me another task. I'm like, oh, don't you know how busy I am? How dare you try to put more work on my plate? Once I feel irritable, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a sign. I need a break. I need to do something for me. And then I need to, you know, approach this with a new mindset, new eyes tomorrow.
Yeah. Being proactive, as you said, is so important. And I always say, put on your oxygen mask first before you can serve others. So I build my morning. I don't put appointments on my morning calendar because that's my time.
Yeah.
That's my time to exercise, to meditate, to journal, to ideate. So generally I won't have appointments during the week until after 1 or 2 PM. And it's just for a few hours. Even coaching clients, like I have days where it's just coaching clients and I don't have things scattered all. I'm not everywhere for everyone at every time.
Yeah.
So I compartmentalize the tasks that I'm doing. So I'm not task switching, but ultimately I put myself first, which sometimes that can sound selfish, but I know that I perform at my best when I do that. I'm available. I'm present. I'm focused on that individual, that client who I'm having that conversation with, or that team when I do that first. Otherwise they're getting maybe 70% of me, and that's not nearly enough. And that chips away at my level of fulfillment too, when we don't do as good of a job as we know we can. So it's this never ending cycle.
Yeah, no, you say it sounds selfish to me. Maybe a couple of years ago, I would have been like, oh yeah, but no, like I've come to realize it's actually selfless, like to take care of yourself and then go to those meetings because you want to bring your whole self to that. It's better to bring 100% to fewer things than 50% to a million things, which is how so many people are operating. And so I love that you're able to recognize, like, how do I take care of myself first and then fully take care of those other people?
Yeah. We're conditioned to honor the grind, right? And the other thing is understanding the neuroscience of leadership. Mm. We are much more innovative and creative when we broaden our focus. So we need to have those times where we're not working on anything in particular. We're just ideating. So we are kind of working. So allow that nap. Allow that playtime, allow that, just the meditation, the walk in nature, the nothingness, allow that, consider that's your work too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a ton of research in those breaks. And, you know, I'll go for a walk in nature or whatever. Well, when the weather's nice in Boston, I'll go outside. But, you know, you're thinking about something that you were working on prior to that. And all of a sudden you're like, huh, I just had a great idea. Like, let me keep that in my head, go back, write it down, start working on that. And the quality of your work, and like you said, the creativity, the innovativeness increases by taking those breaks and taking that time to reflect. Yeah. It's like built-in reflection time.
Exactly. And when we're more innovative, we don't have to work as hard.
Better, not harder.
Right. Oh my gosh. This has been really, really wonderful. I feel as though so many people are going to resonate with what you're saying and the experience you had. You know, what I heard through our conversation is, one, first and foremost, that in order for you to get out of that phase of that cycle of burnout, you took aspects of the things that you love. You did some self-reflection and figured out, what is it that I love? And then you made a decision, I'm going to find something that encompasses these things. Mm-hmm. Even if you didn't know that that existed, you put it out there, you asked. You framed out the way that you want to work, and something aligned with it, and you were clear on your values and how those aligned. And then what I also hear you saying is, you now know to set those boundaries, and you have those little triggers for you. It's like when you feel like that little inkling of a headache emerging, mm-hmm. you know it's time to step away and take a break so that you can be more energized later when you do come back. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you want to share with our audience?
We covered a lot in a short amount of time, but really you summarized it very well. Realizing what you have control over, realizing what you love and what's most meaningful to you, and recognizing those triggers. For me, it's a headache. But just to bring that bodily awareness, you know, we're hunched over our desks and cranking out work. And then, you know, we realize, oh, you know, I haven't been breathing properly or sitting up straight or whatever it is. Just bringing that to, you know, everything you do and trying to take a few deep breaths and recognize those things. One other thing I'll say, shameless plug. Therapy is great. Coaches are great, taking like advantage of those resources. You know, there's a stigma historically with some of those things, but even if you're just like, hey, I'm stressed, you know, you don't have to have this big problem to take advantage of those resources. Therapy has been a wonderful resource that I will always advocate for others to take advantage of.
Yeah, that's amazing. We don't have to go it alone. That's the beautiful thing. And every single one of us has blind spots. I've sought therapy. I have coaches for different aspects of my business and my life. And it's the critical thing that's helped me navigate to this point where I am today. So I would, for anyone who's ready and willing to be coached or, that's an incredible thing to do. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you so much for pouring into our listeners today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you for inviting me. This is my first podcast. I was a little nervous going into it, but I enjoyed everything. It was just a conversation, and then we covered a ton in such a short time, and it was a pleasure.
Oh, my gosh. My pleasure as well. And for those of you listening today, if you haven't listened to all the episodes on burnout, that's what season 2 is all about, dedicated to the topic of burnout. We have a few more sessions on this topic, a panel and a wellness kit we'll be bringing to our audience as well. So dive in there, leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast on. Visit us on ratracereboot.com. We always have some free downloads. My book is up there now, so you can get the first chapter for free. And leave us your comments. See, you know, let us know if this has been helpful. I read your comments. And so we really appreciate you. And as we close today, remember, everything is created twice, first in our mind and then in physical form. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next week.